The president in Indianapolis, will he find support for free community college here? New problems in the BMV, the ongoing effort to grab power from Glenda Ritz, and the governor talks education on Capitol Hill. That plus the HIP 2.0 sign-up, a community rallies behind an injured teenager, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending February 6, 2015.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.
This week, the president came to Indianapolis to spread his message about helping to boost the middle class. Barack Obama delivered a speech at Ivy Tech Community College.
So America is poised for another good year. Indianapolis is poised for another good year, as long as Washington works to keep this progress going. And I was struck as I was listening to the mayor's introduction. You know, here in Indiana, we've been able to do some good things because we haven't been so worried about Democrat, Republican, and we've focused more on trying to get the job done.
Why did the president come here? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel, Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanes, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV Statehouse reporter Jim Shello. Mike McDaniel, is the president's call for tuition-free community college popular in Indiana?
I don't think people really believe that the Congress of the United States is ready to make tuition-free college available across the country, because I don't think most people think we can afford it right now with the fiscal situation that the country is in, and with the president calling for tax increases in this particular year. I think most people realize that that's probably going to be problematic. But in your open, you ask, why did they come here? And I think they were smart to come here, because basically you got one of the largest systems in the United States in Ivy Tech.
200,000 students.
More than probably any other state, and distributed evenly across the state. Indiana has done a good job of keeping tuition low to the point where a good number of our students go for free now or do it at a very highly reduced rate. We have been a leader in these programs that you talked about in the speech about, even at the high school level, what was passed in 2013. With the career councils and so forth and so on, led by Governor Pence. So it's one of these things where we're doing a lot of the things that he's talking about right now, and including in this last budget proposal, he made a $200 million program that basically mirrors what we're doing with the career councils right now in the state of Indiana. So,
technical,
I mean, they're smart to come
here
because we're doing the things that he's talking about. But the fact of the matter is, at the end of the day, it looks to me like it's going to be difficult for Congress to get behind this to pass what the president wants to get done.
Well, and opponents say that if you want tuition-free community college, it should be a state-level program, not a federal program.
Yeah, and the students that are in Ivy Tech now will all be retired before that ever happens in the state. State funding for higher education has declined precipitously, which is why the cost of state education has gone up so much in recent years, at least in large part. I think this is a great idea. I think it's a realization of the fact that a high school diploma is no longer adequate. You need schooling from 4 all the way up to 20, and that's pretty clear. And when we did this, when we made high school available to everybody about 100 years ago, we had a huge economic expansion. That will happen again, and particularly the way it's being proposed, to be done in partnership with businesses to make sure there are careers out there for these graduates. It's a great idea. It's a very solid investment, and we can afford it.
This was an interesting appearance by the president because he came out, shirt sleeves, sleeves rolled up. It took questions and answers.
Right.
Very much had a campaign-style feel to it.
Well, it also has the feel of somebody who's has the pressure of a campaign actually off of them. I think he sees this as his gambit and his opportunity to put forth ideas. And you know, Mike, whether or not he gets everything or all of it, it's an opening bid, if you will. And I think he sees this as a chance to move it forward. And why not come out where you're comfortable, where you're making your pitch, and try to do it as effectively as you possibly can?
So in the General Assembly, there are a couple of bills filed. One of them, I'm told, will get a hearing next week calling for state-level scholarships. Is that going anywhere in the General Assembly?
Probably not. Certainly, though, there would be more appetite for doing something at the state level than what the president proposes in the current General Assembly. There's no question about that. But because of what has been pointed out so far in terms of the economic realities, the dollar amounts that would be attached to this kind of program,
$60 billion over 10 years.
It simply is probably
with another 25% of the funding coming from the states.
Well, that's why it's probably it would be a tall order. You asked about are people supportive. I think, and Mike alluded to this too, about once you peel back the various layers of this onion. You ask the question, should kids have an opportunity to get free or no-cost schooling for 2 years? Oh, yeah, absolutely. But then when you start saying, this is how we're going to pay for it, we've already had a taste of that with the proposed changes to the 529 College Savings Account program where the White House backed off.
Well, they originally looked to that, taxes on that to fund
that's
this.
My point.
Now they're talking about the top 1%.
But that's my point. When you
right.
have the pushback, as was the case right. with the 529, and the reality comes in that it's not free. It's got something else has to give. That's when it starts to erode.
You're only talking about taxing the top 1% of the population to fund this. You know, when Frank O'Bannon started the initiative to create the institution we have now for community college, it had a lot of vision to it. We could lead the country on this, and it isn't only about tuition. The scholarships are good, but it's not enough. Many of those students are working one and two jobs in order to be able to go to school. Free tuition would allow the Pell Grants to go against room and board so that they could actually spend their time studying and graduate, which is what the goal is.
The problem is that $60 billion over 10 years doesn't sound like a lot when you consider the federal budget. But nobody believes it ends at 10 years. And nobody believes that you can do it for that. And that's the problem he's got in Congress, because it's going to go on and on and on once you start it.
But the problem, Mike, is when you look at what today's jobs that pay living wages,
I get all
we
that.
Need
I think,
to have
I think
people.
That's absolutely correct.
And we can't
I
have
think that's
that
correct.
Kind of expansion in jobs if we
and
don't have the
and
population
we're doing those things in Indiana to try to make it as affordable as it can, especially for the two-year institutions. They've had exponential growth in Ivy Tech over the last 10 years. It's
right.
been unbelievable.
But they haven't had exponential graduation rates
well,
in the last 10
years.
They're
doing better than they have.
All right,
it's still not good.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, is tuition-free community college a good idea? Your choices are A, yes, B, no, or C, only for the needy. Last week's question, which of these best describes Just In, the governor's proposed news agency? 3% said well-intentioned mistake. 3% said an understandable misunderstanding, the governor's phrase. 81% said monumental error, and 13% said attempted overreach. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. There is a change of leadership at the BMV this week. That's because Indiana drivers were overcharged by $2 million over the last 6 years. Mike Pence also revealed that over the last 6 years, some drivers were undercharged by a total of $78 million. So Commissioner Don Snemmis is out, reassigned in state government. Kent Abernathy is in. He will greet new internal auditors that will be assigned by the State Board of Accounts as part of changes ordered by the governor.
It's important to know that there could be more. Our review is ongoing, both in terms of our internal operations and working with BKD. And particularly, we're working on issues related to excise taxes for RVs and motor vehicles.
My hope is that they don't think that just changing commissioners is going to be the answer to this problem. There are some serious policy and procedural failures at the BMB that really need to be addressed.
And that's State Democratic Representative Dan Forrestal. Andolini, the governor, says more problems will be exposed down the road. How bad will this get?
It's pretty bad. It's like the gang that couldn't shoot straight. It's one after another. This is the third of these we've seen. And, you know, their response, I mean, Dan Forrestal is actually absolutely right about this. Moving the commissioner to another position doesn't exactly give us a lot of confidence that FSSA isn't going to have that problem going forward, too. But what you've got here is their response to this, all right, they're stepping in now. But at the same time, they're underfunding the State Board of Accounts. They're going to be doing less audits when we have clearly demonstrable problems. And the governor's response is to contract the period of time under which these can be discovered and rectified.
Well, but he's proposing that as legislation. It hasn't happened yet.
But I mean, the problem is they're taking money they shouldn't be taking. And when it's discovered, they ought to be giving it back.
Well, he says that they've been auditing the license branches, but they haven't audited the central office until now. That's an interesting admission.
No. Well, look, when we talked about this last time, they said, we're going to have auditors in. We're going to start working on this. We have an independent group that's working on this.
BKD,
that's what they've been doing.
Yes.
I'm more concerned about the $78 million undercharge than I am about the, what was it?
And the governor says
$2 million in overcharge?
$6 million. $2 million.
$2 million. Right.
Yeah, and he says
I'm more worried about the $78 million in undercharge
that they won't recoup.
That you leave on the table. But, look, they're doing what they said they would do. They said they would find the stuff. They are. They're rolling it out as they do. The governor said there may be more. But in this particular batch of these, we're talking about 2,500 people statewide and things like the antique auto permit decal and that kind of stuff. Yeah. So they're going through it with a fine-tooth comb. If they're looking for that kind of stuff and finding it, that's a good thing, because the more of that stuff you can identify and deal with, then you can finally see the light at the end of the tunnel.
How much is enough?
They do 1,200 different statutes and fees. They have 12.2 million, I think it is, transactions a year. This is a huge operation to deal with this.
And
kind
obviously,
of
they're not dealing
and,
with
and,
it well.
And they are. Well, they're finding it. They're the ones that are doing it.
They're finding it after 6 years.
They're the ones that are doing it.
Attorney Irwin Levin, who has sued the BMV, says that this is really pretty simple. They sell things, they take in money, they distribute money. It shouldn't be that tough. And he also says that he thinks this could go to $100 million. That's
based on his calculation of interest payments. The 30 plus million, I think 37 or 38, that he says, you know, is still effectively unaccounted for or still in question. And of course, he's represented several of the classes in these lawsuits, so I guess he's saying what you would expect a plaintiff's attorney to say. But it's still an embarrassment. I know Ann loves sports metaphors. This is one's just for you. So, I mean, one strike, okay. Everybody kind of says, oh, you get that. You're just sizing up the pitcher. Two strikes, you know, it's getting a little worse. Third, now, maybe he got a piece of this one and he's still at the plate. But after a while, that does become embarrassing, especially when it's an agency that has such a day-to-day interaction with the public.
And they held it up as being reformed under Mitch Daniels.
Well, it was.
It was.
Everybody that goes in the branch will tell you it's better today than ever
so
been.
So it's cleaner and the clocks work, but they're stealing
and
money.
And on time.
This goes
They're stealing money.
These problems go back, apparently, to 2002, which would be before Mitch Daniels. Who should be blamed for this?
I think we all should take a little blame here, because we've cheaped out when it comes to the ability to have the systems in place to handle those kinds of transactions. We have the worst infrastructure from a computer database. We've seen it in a lot of different places, and until we decide to get serious about that and invest the money in doing that and then finding these things out, if it weren't for Irwin Levin, this still would probably be going on. And so until we decide to do that, we aren't going to be able to keep track of these things.
Moving on. The effort to take power away from Glenda Ritz, those efforts continue this week at the State House, highlighted by some commentary from a GOP leader.
Let's welcome Fred. On a recent public television program in Fort Wayne, Senate President Pro Tem David Long seemed to question the qualifications of State Superintendent Glenda Ritz.
No, in all fairness, Superintendent Ritz was a librarian, okay? She has never run a school system. She's probably the first superintendent we've ever had that has not had that experience.
First and foremost, you know, understand that Glenda Ritz is a librarian.
At a media availability in the State House, Senator Long insisted that he respects Ritz. He also stood behind the bill to allow the State Board of Education to elect its chairman, a step that would remove Ritz in all likelihood.
Those who oppose or would like to make it something it's not will try to claim that it's a personal attack, and it's really not. It's about trying to make sure that the board operates more effectively.
John Ketzenberger, librarian. Is that demeaning?
Well, it shouldn't be. I mean, librarians are great people. I know a lot of them. They do hard work, and without them, we'd be lost a lot of ways. But I think that you know, you can understand how, in this context, it could be taken as a diminution of her position as superintendent of public instruction, a board-certified teacher, educator, one of 155 in the state. So I think that if Senator Long... I was surprised he doubled down the other day. Let's leave it at that.
You got bills moving in both houses now to take away the chairmanship of the State Board of Ed. This is on rails.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you look at the numbers. We talk often about the supermajorities, Republican control in both the House and Senate. And they're really, put very simply, there's no way to stop it if you're an opponent of these measures and you're a grossly outnumbered member of the Democratic caucus. So, yeah, I think it is on rails.
What was Senator Long trying to accomplish with his...
Well, I think he's trying to make the point that she's never run anything in her life, and she's now trying to run a state education system and hasn't been very good at it. I think that was the point he was trying to make. And it's true. I mean, I don't fault him for making that point at all. I don't think his words were... actually the way he wanted it to come out, and he explained that in the clip you used there. But the legislation that's been authored in both houses and they're debating now, the difference is that the Senate would have appointments made by various groups, including legislators, and the House bill would mostly still be the governor. And that's going to go back and forth, I think, a little bit. But I look for him to pass something on this. I mean, they could have started the process to make this an appointed position, which everybody in this panel has agreed for years that they needed to do, but they didn't, and so they're going to try to change the chairmanship of the committee, and they should.
I wonder when the word librarian became an epithet. You know, when you listen to that, and you listen to the way he speaks and the condescension in his voice for a woman with 35 years of classroom experience, 35 years, okay, and you listen to that, and you wonder, did he actually mean that a librarian may be synonymous with woman? Maybe if she had been a boys' basketball coach like Tony Bennett, she would have been qualified?
That's funny.
I think that was not only ill-chosen, it was insulting. And he meant to be insulting when he said it, and he should have simply retracted it and said, I shouldn't have said what I said.
We'll ask Laura Bush, since she was a famous
librarian. Librarians
as well.
Are teachers, and she has, as John has indicated, an impeccable record. And a majority of the voters, and by the way, a larger majority voted for her than voted for the governor. Right. And what he is saying is that those voters who picked her and picked her policies were wrong.
And everybody in this panel agreed when that election took place, this wasn't about her. It was about Tony Bennett.
I didn't
so
agree with that.
It's about her now.
I did not agree with that.
It's about her now. It's about her now. Let's move on. Back to the community college issue and Mike Pence's belief that job training should be done in high schools. Governor Pence was on Capitol Hill this week where he testified before the House Committee on Education and the Workforce to talk about what's being done in Indiana to address what's called the skills gap.
I think what's fresh about what Indiana's doing is we want to make career and technical education a priority in every high school. We want our high schools to work for all of our kids, regardless of where they want to start in life.
John Schwanes, he asked for flexibility in the use of federal funds in education. Is he likely to receive that?
Well, I'm not going to bet against him since I said he wouldn't get the flexibility, for instance, with the expansion of Healthy Indiana plan in the manner he did, and he prevailed. So the federal government has shown a willingness to be flexible. But this is what governors, really of both parties, have said for a long time. It's the old block grant argument. Give us the money a chunk of money, yeah. Washington, and we'll figure out what to do with it.
But he's also saying that if you want job training, you should do it in high school, not necessarily in community college.
Well, I think that, that the sooner you can start, people who are inclined to a technical position, and Ann has pointed out, there are lots and lots of good jobs going to be available in technical positions. Why not get people moving in that direction to begin early as they possibly can so that you can make those decisions and get on with it?
Yeah, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. In fact, President Obama spoke to that today and talked about the importance of institutions like Ivy Tech working with high schools to start them early, but it's not going to be enough. It has to go on for two more years, right. And we simply don't have enough post-high school graduates in this state right now,
While he was there, he got quizzed on one of your favorite topics. The Democrats on the panel wanted to know why he turned down $80 million in federal money for pre-K.
Well, that's a good question. And what was his answer?
His answer,
I need flexibility. We're going to do it in dribs and drabs.
He said he didn't want to put federal money into a program that hadn't started yet. Was that a good answer?
Right. No.
Look, I want to say, for starters, that this is exactly what the $200 million that the president's put in his budget request to do what we're doing right now in Indiana. And so he wants to see if that works in other parts of the country. So he's basically copying what was done here with bipartisan support, overwhelming bipartisan support, right here in the state of Indiana.
And the answer is you should have taken the $80 million.
All right. 18,000 people showed up for the expansion, signed up for the expansion of the Healthy Indiana Plan in the first week since the federal government granted approval. 14,000 of those people signed up online, but call centers like this one still handled more than 10,000 calls. Some of the calls are coming from doctors who want to be in the program that expands Medicaid to cover as many as 350,000 low-income Hoosiers. Meantime, Health and Human Services Secretary Sylvia Burwell said on Capitol Hill that a federal waiver for the program was granted to see if HIP might work in other states.
Waivers are a means by which we can try and we can test things to find out if they are things that work. And we look forward to finding out what are the kinds of things that we can do better in Medicaid as a program.
Burwell's comments came under questioning from Indiana Senator Dan Coats. Ann Delaney, will HIP 2.0 become a national example?
I guess we'll wait and see. And, you know, I said before, I don't care what you call it. I mean, we've got a massive expansion of Obamacare in Indiana under Mike Pence, and I think that's a good thing. And I think when we see the number of people that are going to get quality health care as a result of this and the rural hospitals that are going to be bailed out of perhaps bankruptcy as a result of this, it's going to be a very positive thing for the state.
18,000 in the first week, is that a good?
It's a tremendous start. And the good news about it is it shows the governor was right that people are willing to pay to be part of this system. And the fact that doctors were signing up is even more important because the more of them that sign up, the more the broad the care.
And these are doctors who didn't want to accept Medicaid money previously.
Because he negotiated in that the money that they get is going from 55% to 75%, which means you're going to expand the coverage. So, so far it's off to a tremendous start.
Yeah, I think if this does work as hoped and planned, it probably will become something of a national model for many other states because it does have that responsibility, self-responsibility, and self-accountability notion that's going to be attractive to a lot of other Republican governors across the country who have been on the fence.
The other possibility is that the waiver would be pulled.
Well, that is a possibility, and that's if the program doesn't work, then they lose the waiver. But that only time will tell, and
we'll have to wait and see because when you put obstacles, they have had people fail to show up or sign up as a result of each obstacle put in their path.
Finally, Josh Spidell is a star basketball player who is committed to play at Vermont. He was seriously injured in a car accident this week when Columbus North played the first game since his accident. There was a moment of silence in his honor. Fans held up Josh Strong signs in the stands. And the athletic director says a pregame benefit dinner and T-shirt sales raised an estimated $9,000 for the family.
This is the greatest outpouring of love for a ball player that I've ever seen in my life. It's phenomenal.
Josh has touched so many people in so many ways that while it is overwhelming, it's not surprising to me. That's how special of a guy Josh Spidell is.
Julie Spear there, preceded by Karen Freeman, Mike McDaniel. Columbus would appear to be pretty special, too.
Oh, absolutely. It's a great community, but this tragic accident, this young man is a model citizen in that school and a tremendous future ahead of him, and we're hopeful that he will recover and get well enough to where he can continue that But anytime you're dealing with that kind of head trauma situation, you just don't know. You got to give it time.
They raised another $11,000 in a GoFundMe account. It's
right, and I think Dan Dockage has made this something of a cause as well.
He
and
is.
It's a very good outpouring.
Get well, Josh.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shello of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.